Hey y'all, got another throwback episode for you. This is one of our early color episodes, and listening back through got us inspired to do another color-related episode in the near future. Could it be yellow, pink, green? Let us know what color you'd like to hear about. For now, enjoy our episode on The Color Purple, originally released September 13th, 2016.
The Art History Bay.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ginny.
And I'm Jen.
And we are the Art History Babes.
Today we are diving into The Color Purple.
Wow, you know what's funny? I just realized that I just rewatched The Color Purple just the other night.
Oh, dang.
You know, that's a great movie, you guys. If you haven't seen The Color Purple, watch The Color Purple.
It's a book, too, right?
It's a book. Yeah. The book is like a... It's kind of laid out like a diary, but yeah, the movie, Danny Glover, all right, Oprah,
awesome.
Whoopi Goldberg,
yeah,
I mean, you can't be mad, then yeah, it's so amazing, because now we're actually talking about purple, and there's a really good line in the movie, where she says, you know, I think God must get mad when people walk by the color purple without even noticing it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
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 Is that where the title comes from? Or are there
that's where the title comes from.
Oh, I think that fits in very nicely with a lot of our stuff.
Yeah. It really does.
Yeah, because you know what? That, something about purple, man,
it
just draws you in.
Yeah. It's a rather ethereal color.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
And as you will learn by the end of this episode, a lot of connections with spirituality and God and such things. So we might as well just dive into it. Okay, so purple. Much like in our color theory episodes, we're going to kind of start with, I guess, like the science-y side of things a little bit. We're going to talk about the light spectrum and how that relates to the color purple. So, Natalie.
All right. So just to start off, I want to differentiate a little bit between purple or, I mean, and obviously these are all names that we've given the way that we interpret colors, but purple as the composite color between red and blue. So you think kind of on the color wheel, and then violet as a spectral color. So on the rainbow. So those are kind of two different variations of what we think of as purple, and just understanding the difference between mixing colors or as it appears to us through light. So violet as a spectral color is actually the color that has the most powerful, is the most powerful wavelength. What that kind of means is, if you get into science and physics and whatnot, and you're looking at wavelengths, it goes basically from microwaves to gamma rays, just in size.
Oh. Someone's driving by, blasting their tunes.
Yeah. Rarity.
That makes it sound ancient.
Blasting their tunes.
Anyways.
So kind of right in the middle of these waves, or like on the scale of waves, are what we see. So the visible spectral waves. So rainbow colors, you know, red to violet. And then right on the other side of red is infrared, you know, the like infrared light. And then on the other side of the rainbow is ultraviolet. So we're kind of thinking between violet that we see and then into the ultraviolets, which are very powerful wavelength.
That makes sense.
Me trying to talk about science is
Great, Nat.
And isn't ultraviolet the rays that will give you the melanoma?
Yeah, yes.
The melanoma.
The melanoma. Good point. The infamous melanoma.
So that's what violet can do.
Well,
very, very powerful, not always in a positive way.
But in terms of like the difference just in the way we see violet and purple,
like the hardest color, one of the hardest colors for the eye to see.
Yeah, it's kind of complicated, because you have like when you think about the rainbow and like what we all learned in kindergarten, like the Roy G. Biv, you have indigo violet, which indigo is like this really like kind of blue purple. And then there's violet. And they're, at least in the way we're taught the rainbow, two separate things in terms of their wavelengths on the visual spectrum of light. Mm-hmm. But we lump it all into purple. But one thing I read was that when you're just looking at it as a color, that violet is usually a lot less saturated than purple. And as violet brightens up, it looks more blue, Whereas a purple mm-hmm. color, like what Natalie was saying with the whole composite color, mm-hmm. like a purple color that's a composite of red and blue light doesn't do that. As it gets brighter, it just looks like a brighter purple. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, it does make sense. And I think, I don't know, this might just be my like insanely visual brain, but the way I think of it is on the wavelength, purple's nowhere near red. They're at opposite ends. So it really, the fact that we view it as somewhere between red and blue has nothing to do with it on a spectral scale. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if we're mixing colors, then it's red and blue. But on the scale, it's separate. It has nothing to do yeah. with red.
And
it's not made up of red and blue mix.
I think that's like the first thing that is talked about when you're doing any kind of like color theory
mm-hmm.
is the difference between the visible spectrum and how light merges mm-hmm. and creates colors and like pigments and
yeah.
how we
exactly.
mix pigments.
Yeah.
So those two are very, they have their own set of laws.
Yeah.
But people, I think, get them confused often.
Totally. And it's kind of interesting that we didn't get to that in our color theory episode, now that I'm thinking of it.
Yeah.
So
there was
too much to talk about. We were too busy crying about Van Gogh and, yeah.
So I guess it's good that the colors are getting their own separate episodes, because we still have a lot to say.
So exciting.
So, yeah, this whole idea of purple and violet and where they kind of fit in the spectral, as a spectral color, and then the rarity of it. So the way that it's difficult to kind of see as light, and sometimes people have difficulty identifying it. And then also just that it's really sparse in nature. And this kind of plays into the idea that it's rare, which inherently makes it valuable to humans, because that's what we think. If
mm-hmm.
we can't get a lot of something, then we want it really badly. So once we start seeing purple more, not more in nature, but enough to recognize it, and people learn how to turn it into pigments and all of this good stuff, it becomes associated very quickly with wealth, with luxury, with royalty, with religion and power, basically. But it also kind of just has this like really, there's like all of the earthly power related associations, but there's also this intense spirituality, and that can kind of be connected to more of the cosmos light, like spectral side of the color, kind of the violet versus like this deep, deep purple that you'll see a little more in the pigments. And yeah, and so it gets these associations with like magic and mystery and creativity, not just earthly wealth. So you get kind of like these two opposite sides of the same coin that come with rarity. Yeah, that's what I have to say about purple. And my nails are really dark purple right now, and I really like
it. Oh, yeah, my toenails are purple.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, wait. Mine are purple, too. What? But they're barely hanging on.
Mine are black. But I'm wearing purple.
I have a purple. You know what? Speaking of black, can I just say that I would love to do an episode on black?
Yeah, of
course.
Speaks to me.
Yeah. And other than that, passing it on.
So that's kind of how that works in physics world. Some other associations, like Natalie just mentioned, obviously royalty, mystery, magic. In Catholicism especially, it's related to like piety. It also has a connection to eroticism and seduction.
Yes.
Which we are going to talk about later.
Oh,
with
yeah.
One of our
yes.
favorite
erotic gods.
Erotic gods. Who hails from Erotic City.
But we'll keep you guessing on that one. We haven't figured it out
yet.
They
have no idea.
But okay, so a little more history on the color purple. The color purple, which we did define as different from violet. However, tones of violet are part of this conversation too as well. It all kind of started with Tyrian purple.
What's the Tyrian?
The Tyrian. Actually,
not to be confused with our favorite game.
Lannister.
Yes, exactly.
I don't.
Out of the loop.
Yeah.
Completely.
Sorry, Jen, Game of Thrones.
I never watched it. Can't believe it.
The reason it's called Tyrian purple is because it came from ancient. Was it?
Tyria?
No. Phoenicia, which is modern-day Lebanon, but the two cities were Tyre and Sidon. So that's where Tyrian comes from. So kind of backing up a little bit, there is some, like, Tyrian purple is the first real, like, purple color, purple pigment. But there is some suggestion that some prehistoric cave art was made from kind of a purple hue that came from sticks of manganese and hematite powder. And I think that's kind of debatable because we're also, like, dealing with it so much later. So some people look at it as purple and some people are like, no, it's like brown.
Yeah.
But so that's a possibility as the first, you know, purple. But this Tyrian purple, it's kind of like the lapis lazuli of purple.
Yes.
And we talked about lapis
lazuli. Say no more. I understand completely.
Ginny's got it. And hopefully if you listen to our color theory part one episode, you get it too. Lapis lazuli is kind of like with this really important stone that's
super rare.
Super rare, created this really beautiful blue that was, the revered and
exclusive.
It was very exclusive. So that's kind of what Tyrian purple is. Like I said, it first came on the scene 15th century BCE with the ancient Phoenicians. And it's made of the secretion of sea snails.
Ooh.
Yeah. Murex sea snails, to be exact.
I'm about to look them up. I need to know what they look like.
They look like snails.
Well, spoiler alert.
But so this secretion that these snails have is a mechanism of predatory behavior, and it's also used as an antimicrobial.
Yeah.
Got it, baby.
Lining for egg masses.
Oh,
wow. How beautiful.
Oh, that's a really pretty picture.
Oh, wow.
We're going to post this.
Yeah.
They're pretty.
They're actually super beautiful.
I thought it was going to look like a little piece of poop.
Yeah.
A little poop.
No, that's a really. This is the picture I was looking at before. But,
very cool, you guys. Very cool.
Get excited.
So they're these Murex sea snails. And the secretion that comes out of them is this Tyrian purple. And to get the secretion, you basically have to agitate these sea snails. So this isn't, like, animal-friendly at all.
Poor babies.
And you can kind of just, like, poking them and stuff. Like, poking at them. But what people typically did, because it was easier, was just crush them.
Yeah.
Let's just crush all the sea snails.
No.
Which is a little bit of a bummer. Now, where it gets even more interesting is they don't really produce a lot of this secretion. There was actually a study in 2008 by Paul Friedander. He basically did this himself. He crushed 12,000 snails.
Shit.
12,000. And he got 1.4 grams of pure Tyrian purple dye.
What?
Yeah. What a dick.
What?
So basically enough to dye a handkerchief.
Go mix some red and some blue together. Jesus.
So this is...
He's supposed to look really annoyed. He looks very sad.
Natalie made this great little doodle.
We're about to post it on the Instagram. It's a horrible drawing.
Of someone poking a sad little sea snail. But yeah, we'll post it on Instagram for you. But what is kind of interesting, so obviously these sea snails don't produce a lot. Once again, speaking to the rarity of this dye, it was hard to get a substantial amount of dye. What's kind of interesting is, like I said, this started in the ancient sites of Tyre and Sidon, and they have found mountains of empty shells.
I don't doubt it.
In these sites, to kind of speak to the amount of snails that they crushed to make their purple things. So I mean, kind of a bummer. Yeah, so that's where it all started. Obviously, very rare, very hard to get this color, thus making it very expensive. So we have already setting up this whole purple is the color of wealth and royalty, and it costs money. And we see that in multiple cultures throughout history, starting with the great Cleopatra.
I love her so much. even though she's killing hella snails. But so in the color theory episode, when I was talking about blue lapis lazuli, and I was talking about how Cleopatra wore eyeshadow,
ground from lapis lazuli, and I was like, you know, it was cool. She did it. So same logic. She was all about purple. So, you know, it was fucking cool and luxurious and seductive and powerful.
All
and,
of the luxurious stuff. Yeah.
She had purple sails on all her ships, dyed with the guts of snails.
Yes, queen.
She had purple furniture covers, again, dyed with snails. And her palace was lined with purple stone. And this really kind of catapulted into, like, purple being more of a symbol of, like, royalty and power and luxury, especially when Caesar was in Egypt and he defeated Pompey. And then he goes to her palace and she throws a big old lavish meal and they have sex. And then he goes back to Rome and he's like, hey, I defeated Pompey. I slept with Cleopatra. Here I am in my purple toga, dyed with snail guts. Like, only I can wear this. And that's, like, how you start seeing all these, like, Roman emperors wearing these purple togas and purple becoming more and more and more this symbol, this color of power that, like, not everyone was entitled to wear. You could only wear it if you really had the claim to it.
Or if you were banging Cleopatra.
Yeah.
She got around. She was a very sexual woman.
She was.
Yeah. But I don't think everyone got purple. So that was like the black credit card club of banging Cleopatra. Yeah.
You had to break it off real good to get the purple toga.
But yeah, so, you know, that's just one example. And in particular, like the purple stone, and I might pronounce this incorrectly again. Porphyry.
Yeah, that sounds
great. Cool. Porphyry stone. And so this is the same stone that later Byzantine emperors would use to line their palaces as well. And this led to an expression called born in the purple. And this essentially indicated someone that was born into this kind of wealth and privilege and power. And so it just kind of shows this trail of purple as being a color that signifies power and luxury and wealth.
They used purple to decorate, like, the rooms where children would be born in the Byzantine Empire. So, like, you legitimately were, like, born into this purple room.
Hmm.
Yeah, in addition to, like, this idea of being born into royalty, it also being born in the purple meant it separated an emperor that was, like, born into it from an emperor that maybe, like, won a conquest or, like, military battle. If you're born in the purple, it's almost like a purer way of being an emperor, I guess you could say.
Less blood.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Maybe. I don't know. It's that imperial, like, you know.
Birthright.
Yeah, birthright. Exactly, exactly.
Monarchical.
This purple was the imperial color of the Byzantine Empire as well as the Holy Roman Empire. As well as, I just learned, Japanese aristocracy.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, as Ginny was kind of saying, this purple was restricted, like, just to very important people. And that goes for its production, too. Like, you had to be important to even produce this purple.
Yeah.
Like, you had to be important to produce it. You had to be important to wear it. It was very restricted. And doing so outside of these restrictions could result in really strict punishment. Like, you could be punished for it.
Yeah. Wasn't there a whole thing during, I forget which emperors it was, but there were Roman emperors who banned anyone from wearing purple other than them. And I think it was Nero that it was by punishment of death.
Yeah. That sounds like something Nero was.
Exactly. Yes. It had to be Nero.
And but only Caesar, like, when he came back in those purple robes, he's like, only I can wear these fuckers.
Likewise, Charlemagne was crowned while wearing the Tyrian purple. And he was buried in it as well. So it was just basically emperors were just like, this is my color.
It's an elegant color.
It's a great color.
It evoked royalty and elegance and luxuriousness.
And mystery, too, at the same time.
Intrigue,
exactly. This is the color of of many empires. And after the fall of Constantinople to the Ottoman Turks in 1453, this color starts to lose imperial status for a while.
Mm.
It kind of fades away. Which brings us into the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, where the color at this point comes more to be associated with it still has a pretty strong association with people higher up in the ranks, but it's not this hardcore imperial color at this point in time. It's associated with, like, the lesser clergy of the church, such as bishops and archbishops wear purple. It's also academics wear it, so professors in these early universities. Also, in Renaissance paintings, angels and the Virgin Mary are often portrayed wearing purple or violet robes. One example, which we'll post on the website, would be Giotto's Madonna and Child. She's all in these purple robes.
I do love me some Giotto.
You gotta. You gotta.
We gotta love Giotto.
Yes. And that is the catchphrase of this episode.
I wish I had thought of that for my favorite.
You are. We're always on top of it with the catchphrases. I love it.
I want that little air horn. Like, meow, meow, meow. I think I'm about to bring that up, like, every time that we get, like, the catchphrase.
Yeah.
They have an app now where you can press the app on your phone and you get the air horn.
Oh, that'd be great.
Meow, meow, meow. That was our catchphrase for the day.
So yeah, so that's kind of the situation in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. Still though, even though it's not hardcore aristocratic imperial, it's still only for rich people. It's still only for people that are like higher up. Your common person does not have access to purple. And this is pretty much the situation until 1856. So 19th century, it's a long time that purple is not available to people.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens in 1856 is this young chap named William Henry Perkin, he's a chemistry student, he develops in his little chemistry lab, he develops a purple shade that we now know as mauve.
I love that color.
It's a good color. He develops it, and it's affordable, it's easy to produce, and as a result, it becomes fashionable and affordable for others in the late 1800s or 1800s. So that's when it kind of becomes a color that us common folk get to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And is not strictly aristocratic any longer.
I appreciate that.
Thanks, William Henry Perkin.
Yeah.
I like that color. I like it too. I wouldn't be able to wear this tank top right now if it wasn't for you, bro. Not that this is mauve, but...
Well, you guys can't see it, but it's very lovely. It's a lovely hue, and we appreciate Corey for dressing for the occasion. Thank you, Corey.
No problem. No problem. I got you. You guys all coordinated your nail polish, though. I feel out of the loop on that.
I didn't mean to. Just coincidence.
This pedicure is a month old, girl.
Yeah, mine's at least
a month.
It's ridiculous how long I leave my toenail polish on. Like, it lasts for quite a while.
I can't go a week with my fingernails painted because I just pick them all off because I'm just like a little neurotic weirdo. But on my toes, they last forever.
Forever, yeah.
Because I'm not picking at my toes because I'm not an animal.
Yeah.
So pedicures last a very long time.
Yeah, for real. So that's kind of some of the basics of the history of the color purple. Jumping a little bit more into the art world, purple was popular among different art movements. So purple was really popular among the Pre-Raphaelites.
They loved all that stuff.
Yeah. They loved it.
All that stuff. They
really liked it, as did the Impressionists.
Yes.
In fact, the Impressionists. In fact, the Impressionists were once accused as having violettomania.
Wow.
Which is quite the term.
That's so cool.
I know. Violettomania. I have a quote from Monet where he's just stoked on purple. And
awesome.
I know. And he goes, "I have finally discovered the true color of atmosphere. It's violet. Fresh air is violet."
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. And this actually connects back to our science-y stuff from earlier. Claude Monet's seeing violet in the air in all these, like, impressionist paintings he's doing in these landscapes and
such.
Was
he tripping? Was he on to something?
He was on to something. Something we call atmospheric perspective. You know how the mountains look purple? You know how mountains appear purple? Especially, you know, at, like, dusk or dawn, you know. Times when the sun is low, mountains tend to appear purple. The reason is because it's basically atmospheric perspective in action. What happens is the way the light's falling on the mountains, it's the blue of the sky meets the color of the mountains, and in terms of the visual spectrum of light, you end up with this like violet. You see a violet. You see violet.
You see it, guys.
You see the violet.
Well, you know what is really interesting is Leonardo da Vinci was doing that. I don't know why I couldn't say his name. In some of his paintings, like the Mona Lisa, the background, he uses that atmospheric perspective.
Yeah.
Makes the background like hazy.
Sfumato.
There it is.
That's it.
That's the word.
That's the one. And a bunch of his paintings do that, actually. So
no, he was the godfather of atmospheric perspective.
God, just killing it.
Killing it. He definitely figured that shit out, like,
love,
way before
him.
Before anyone. So that's kind of why mountains appear purple, and that's why Monet was all about purple and atmosphere and it being the color of atmosphere. Also, it was a favorite color of Gustav Klimt, which...
Not gold?
Well,
yeah,
I think
he was
into the gold, too. But I mean, like,
pinch.
But gold and purple.
He likes expensive colors.
Friends. Yeah. Gold and purple are friends.
They are such good friends.
And which makes sense.
Yeah.
Why he would enjoy both of those. There's also some really good Rothkos that are just shades of purple.
Mm.
Some of my, like, favorite ones. Those are the ones where you get spiritual with it when you're looking into those.
That makes sense with what he thought about his paintings, like the way that he interpreted their meanings and stuff, that he would get into the most spiritual color.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, no, there's a couple of them where it's just different shades of purple, like, interacting with one another, and they're beautiful. Rothko, all the way. So those are some of the expressions of purple in art history that are common. Purple has also had a pretty serious history with social movements. It kind of left the connection with royalty during the Renaissance after the Ottomans took over the Byzantine Empire, but it reemerged in the 20th century. So we reconnect with this idea of royalty, embracing purple, wearing purple, all of that. Then in the early 1900s, it's associated with women's suffrage.
What?
Rock the vote.
I got
rock that vote.
I got the...
Oh,
okay, hold on.
Okay.
Women's suffrage! Yes!
I want that on my phone.
Yeah,
it's right
perfect.
Now.
Women's suffrage, along with green and white, those were like the three colors that associated with that movement. And then it continued into the feminist movement of the 1970s. They kept those colors. So as a feminist podcast, we've got to be repping the colors of the feminist movement, obviously.
I can't stop.
What is that one called? I want it now too. I need it for Android. Ham horn. Shout out to Ham Horn. You guys.
Ham sponsor us.
Just sponsor us. Hey, Ham Horn.
Yes.
Sponsor us, please.
We'll use you in every single podcast, I promise.
It's like at the most inopportune moments.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it was associated with women's suffrage, which is dope. Continued to be associated with a feminist movement, also dope. And then it also came in the 70s, along with the feminist movement, really just came to be associated with counterculture in general. And we're going to talk about that a lot more when we get to the music history portion of our discussion.
Yes, can't wait!
Because purple was big. Purple was big in the 70s and then into the 80s, and for sure.
Your sounds like a fart.
Yeah.
Mine sounds really bad.
Yours is not nearly as crisp.
I got the muffled ham horn.
Muffled ham horn.
Hey, ham horn. Figure that out.
You need to figure it out on Android.
Why does it sound so bad?
It's great on iPhone, but you really need to work it out on Android.
We just lost our sponsorship.
So it's associated with counterculture. And then in recent years, purple has definitely come to be one of the colors of LGBTQ rights.
Yep.
Wearing purple to support LGBTQIA, in addition to, because the rainbow is a really common one, but purple is also a color associated with that cause. Which, once again, do we want to get the ham horn out? Because we can get behind that one.
I mean, but you guys are going to make fun of my ham horn. Man, you know, I happen to really enjoy my ham horn. Let's give it another try.
Okay, so purple is associated with LGBTQ rights.
I'm biting in your ham horn.
All right, so... In the last century, purple is associated with some dope social movements. We can kind of put it at that. Quick, some things on religion. Purple, it's a big color in Catholicism.
To Pope?
Yeah, it's priests wear it to represent penitence. So when you're doing confession, if you're Catholic and you go in for confession, the priest is going to be wearing purple, and it's also worn during Lent. It's a big Lenten color. Mm. So in Catholicism, currently, it's a pretty important color. The New Age circle, so like Wicca and such.
Yes.
Yes. So I did a little bit of research because I've been getting more and more into that like Wicca stuff.
Yeah, you did, you little witchy babe.
Dude, I found this amazing podcast that I want to give a shout out to called Hippie Witch. You all need to check it out. Ooh. She's fantastic. She's out of LA, so maybe like if you're listening, maybe we can like meet up or something and do like a collabo.
Hippie Witch, we want to meet you.
She's fantastic. She's absolutely great, and she's like really cool and into like Wicca, and also like I've only listened to a few episodes, but it actually has really good crossover into what we talk about, because she talks a lot about like mythology and like just different archetypes and things that are found in visual art a lot. So it's a really solid podcast. Check it out. So in Wicca, purple can have a lot of meanings, because Wicca, the fun thing about Wicca is it's kind of a like DIY religion. Like it's kind of like there are guidelines, but it's like, but kind of do what makes you feel good. So it's pretty nebulous. But some of the stuff I found, purple represents self-esteem, spirituality, transformation and healing, nobility and enlightenment, and higher consciousness, which all kind of associates with the things we said before, the historical basis for purple. Also, this actually reaches back to what we talked about in our color theory episode where we talked about blue. We had a quick little bit about the chakras. Mm-hmm. So once again, this is interesting
because
it connects to the color spectrum in the way we were talking about earlier. You have the third eye chakra, which is indigo, and that chakra is meant to open consciousness and awareness of higher planes. And then the highest chakra is the crown chakra, which is violet.
Yeah!
It lasts so long.
So the chakras obviously are in alignment with the visible color spectrum. We've got the indigo and the violet, and purple plays with both of those. But the crown chakra is violet, and it represents wisdom, being one with the world, and seeking spiritual fulfillment.
Is that the highest chakra?
That is the highest chakra.
God damn, yes.
Right? Purple is the highest chakra, and if you're working on your crown chakra, you are working towards spiritual fulfillment, so. Oh,
damn, dude, I need to start working on my crown chakra.
I know.
So I've been working on those base desires.
Those base chakras?
The base chakra. What are they, like, the low ones?
Red is, well, one of them is, like, the base chakra.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It's not important, but, you know.
It is important, though.
It is important. Well, I mean, we're going to talk about it later, but the crown chakra.
If you have time, work on your chakras a little bit. That, I think, is actually a great segue into purple and music. Yes. Because we're going to spend a nice, solid amount of time talking about someone who undoubtedly had his crown chakra figured out. Like, he was.
When as a young lad,
yeah, he had all of his chakras in alignment. He was,
fuck yeah,
he had it figured out. So I'm gonna pass this.
Don't do it,
Jen. I'm gonna do it.
I'm gonna pass this over to Ginny, and we're gonna talk about Prince.
Oh my god.
The worst thing you guys ever did was let me start pressing that fucking button.
Oh my god.
I have so many things I want to say too. So
okay,
I'm gonna
move out of the way.
Okay. Yeah, Jen and I are both going to talk about Prince because
he's
like our shared boyfriend. He was in life and he certainly is in death.
Yeah, he's our shared dead boyfriend.
Yeah, and that's just the way it is. He's beyond that shit anyways, you know?
Yeah, like, if I honestly, if I've ever been concerned about anyone after they die, like, I'm not concerned about Prince. No. Like, he's fine.
He's right okay. Now.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that image? It was the day that Prince died, when the sun set, it was a majestic purple sky as the sun was setting. And somebody took a picture and posted it on their Instagram and said that, you know, Prince, in typical fashion, he couldn't just die, you know.
He really couldn't.
He couldn't just die. he left the world a more purple place.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you think of Prince, you really, I mean, I'm sure that you think of a lot of great things about him. But one of them, namely, is the color purple. And this is for a lot of different reasons, mainly that he really incorporated purple into his kind of visual style, aesthetic, like, it's everywhere. And especially, like, in the 90s, the 80s and the 90s, Prince was getting really interested in the apocalypse. And, you know, like, the 1999, like, that's all about just, like, fucking partying. Like, the world is gonna end. The cover, I have, like, a really moderate record collection. And unfortunately, the only Prince album I have is 1999. I'll get more. But it's purple as fuck with a lot of cool letters. At least one of them is incredibly phallic. Two of the numbers have
Prince's
eyes.
That's a penis.
We'll post some images of it because there's photos on the inside. There's one of Prince naked in a bed.
So
painting
hot.
With watercolor in gloves.
He has the cutest little butt.
It's great. It's great.
Prince makes me feel all kinds of conflicting emotions.
Yeah.
Have you experienced this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I look at him and I want to be him, but I want to be on him, and it's just really confusing.
And I think he does that to, like, the great majority of people.
Yeah.
Like, all sexes, all sexual orientations, like,
yeah.
They're just like, Prince, yeah.
Yes.
It's just...
Totally.
Well, back to this idea of where Prince got the idea to be, like, associated with purple.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And I think we both read the same article,
mm-hmm.
where he essentially said that Purple Rain specifically referred to the mixing in the sky.
Yeah.
So Prince explained Purple Rain: when there's blood in the sky, red and blue equals purple. Purple rain pertains to the end of the world and being with the one you love and letting your faith/God guide you through the purple rain.
That's so beautiful.
Wow.
That's very
and,
beautiful.
You know, and yeah, it's very, you know, a little bit of Slayer.
Yeah.
Like rainy
totally,
blood.
Totally.
Rainy blood.
And it takes you a while to even, like, fully, because, like, the first time I read that, I was like, okay, what the fuck are you talking about, Prince? But then you're, like, thinking about it more and you're just like, okay. So it's like the end of the world, and there's blood in the sky, because it's the end of the world, right? And the sky is blue, and then they come together, and it makes purple, and it's raining, and all you want to do is just dance in it with, like, your special person, and be
aww.
Like, well, this shit's going to hell in a handbasket, but, like, here we are.
I love it.
It's a really, like, lovely,
great.
Frightening, but lovely.
That just made me feel, like, devastatingly, like, sad
and sappy kind of though,
but
too.
But like happy at the same time.
Sappy,
I don't know.
Sappy.
Yeah, because like, what else can you do in that scenario?
Yeah.
But like, fucking dance in that purple rain.
Yeah,
purple rain.
Oh,
purple rain.
So good. It's so good. So that's like one of the major connections between Prince and the color purple. But you can also see it emerging, like, earlier than the Purple Rain album, Purple Rain single, Purple Rain movie. So clearly it was, like, an interest for Prince in this color purple. And just, I mean, it's pretty fitting because he is, like, such an enigmatic, like, genius that there are multiple kind of conjectures to why Prince chose purple. One of them, if you take, like, a really punny approach, it's like Purple Rain, you can spell it R-E-I-G, And I'm like, oh, yeah. And obviously Wayne. His name is Prince, so the royal connotation there is not lost on anyone.
Yeah.
And he was the Prince of Pop. Sorry, Michael. Yeah. I'm sorry. But it was Prince. Sorry.
Prince was...
Sorry.
Sorry, not I'm not sorry.
You know what? My...
Rude. Interesting little side note also about the Michael Jackson Prince relationship. Prince refused to do a tour with Michael Jackson.
And he refused to be on the song Beat It.
Uh-huh.
Because Prince is so fucking dope. so he was supposed to be on the song Beat It. And like one of the lyrics in Beat It is like, your ass is mine.
Your ass is mine.
And Prince was like, I don't know whose ass he's talking about, but I wasn't going to be a part of that. I'm probably not quoting that directly. If you if you look up, we'll post it too.
We will. Fucking dope. Yeah.
Not that it's just a funny aside, but
Prince. Yeah, Prince thought Michael was too weird for him. He was like, nah.
Prince just had so much.
He turned out to be in a lot of ways.
No, he did. Of course. But like Prince just knew. Had such a presence and like such an attitude and such like. I mean, he was such a visually like. Cultivate like so conscious of like how he represented himself like visually in his like album artwork and like how he was on stage, and Purple was really like an integral part of that. And like another thing that I came across for like why particularly Purple was really big for him, so Prince is from Minnesota.
Midwest represent.
Whoop.
And I don't know anything about football because I hate it, but so the Vikings, which
that's a team,
are the Minneapolis.
Minnesota.
They're out of Minneapolis.
Okay. But they don't call them that.
No, they're the Minnesota Vikings. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't. Minnesota only have one, right? I know that much.
Minnesota has one Viking.
And because being from the Midwest, like we have a team in Illinois, we have a team in Minnesota. And Wisconsin.
Did you guys know that Corey's from the Midwest?
I'm from the Midwest. and I'm also very, very proud of the fact that Prince is from the Midwest, as he was. He repped Minnesota like
he purified himself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
He has, and I'm gonna take you all to the Midwest, and we're gonna go purify ourselves in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
I won't say no.
Lake Minnetonka is delightful.
I'll wear a leather like bodysuit, and
you guys will go in the summer. It's warm in the summer.
Fine.
I'll wear nothing.
I will wear nothing.
But back to the Vikings, this team. Right? So their colors are purple and gold. And as being a proud Minnesotan, he loved the Vikings, and he even wrote a song for them in 2010 called Purple and Gold.
Oh, really Prince.
So these are just some of the articles that I came across that talked about this connection of purple. And like I said, I mean, we can't say for sure. And I really think that was intended by Prince, because he was a mysterious, cool dude. And he still is, because that mystery is just like so magical.
He didn't die. He just transcended.
Oh, he totally did. And is there any color more mysterious than purple? Like, no. If you have to pick one to represent mystery, it's purple.
It was the right color. His name is Prince.
Prince. Yeah. So, in short, this episode is dedicated to Prince.
It really is.
Born Prince Rogers Nelson in 1958, Minneapolis. We miss you, Prince.
We really do.
We were listening to Erotic City before we started recording. Great song. If you haven't heard it, look it up. Controversy. Mm-hmm. The whole album.
Mm-hmm.
Learn it.
Yeah.
Do Me, Baby. God damn it. What a great song. All the popular ones, you know. All the doves were crying All the doves.
All the doves.
Yeah. I turned into a dove and I cried the day that Prince died.
No, we got the news together. We were sitting in our TA class together.
Yeah.
And we both like teared up a little bit.
Yeah, Corey and I were totally teeing.
And you know I don't cry that often.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Corey and I cry all the time, but still, we were teeing a design class together last quarter.
Yeah.
And we found out and we all said no. And then our lovely professor played Prince.
She did. And it was like a happy Prince song. It was really nice.
And that's the thing that's so cool about Prince, because when you listen to most of those songs, they're fucking happy.
Yeah.
And they make you want to like dance and just have a good time.
Prince
and that's
makes
what
me,
we
yeah.
should remember.
Yeah. Prince makes me happy and horny and just
yeah.
sexy feeling. And
yeah.
Feeling good. Feeling confident.
I couldn't ask for anything more. So Prince, thank you. I hope you're watching down on us. I hope you send us a lot of purple vibes over the next year while we're writing our theses.
Please.
And working on this podcast. All of your purple vibes.
We love you.
Peace.
Prince.
Bye.
Oh wait, we still need to talk about other stuff.
Yeah, we have a few other things.
On that note,
just a couple of other music history notes with The Color Purple. I mean, obviously Prince is not only the prince, but the king of purple. Mm. But some other important ones that kind of relate back to the whole 1970s counterculture, purple being a big color. Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix.
Yes.
Purple Haze
is a big one.
Oh,
also,
afraid.
I'm going to just keep going with the Midwest shout-outs here.
Yeah.
Deep Purple, the band.
Oof.
Smoke on the Water.
Yeah.
So Deep Purple, Tommy Bolin, actually from my hometown, Sioux City, Iowa.
Shout out.
So Midwest love all around on this episode.
we should have done some California research. Some Northern California research.
Hey, we
dropped the ball, guys.
No, it's fine. You know what? You guys
California gets plenty of attention.
Yeah, Midwest doesn't get enough attention.
Everyone's always talking about California. Like, let's talk about Minneapolis.
So, why not? So those are just some other notable uses of purple in the 1970s counterculture, the music scene, all of that, and kind of connects with these ideas of mystery and just maybe being a little different, I think, is
mm-hmm.
very
yeah.
typical of purple. For history and such, that's pretty much all we have. A fun little contemporary tidbit. The other day, I came across this article on the internet, and I was super stoked on it. They found, because they're searching the bottom of the ocean a lot more than they have been in recent years. There was a live feed from Mariana's Trench recently, which was so dope. I spent way too much time watching it. But, yeah, it's crazy. The shit down there is crazy, you guys.
No, really. The Mariana Trench is one of those places on Earth that is super mysterious and crazy, and we don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to learn about all the crazy stuff. I think there's aliens living down there.
There legitimately is. Well, okay, this is off topic, but actually there is, I read another article that says that octopi are the closest.
What?
In terms of molecular structure, are the closest things to aliens on Earth.
Oh my God.
Whoa!
Oh my God.
I know! They're probably aliens. It's crazy.
Whoa!
I fucking love octopi.
The little hairs on the back of my neck just stood up.
But back to purple. They recently found, this literally happened, it was the last week of July, I think. And I, like, it's so great. And we'll post a link to this on our webpage. But scientists found on the bottom of the ocean this glowing purple orb. Like,
what?
Bioluminescent purple
it's
orb.
The best thing I've heard
and
in a while.
I know. And it's so great. Like, the article is so great because, one, it's like 2 paragraphs long because they literally have no idea what it is.
That's awesome.
I know. And they're just
and
like.
I'm glad they didn't just like snatch it up and like take it away to some fucking lab. I'm glad that they were like. Hmm.
The suggestions are it might be some type of like weird egg sac. Or it might be related to, like, a sea slug. But literally, they have no idea what it is. There's a picture of it. It's really cool. It's a glowing purple orb at the bottom of the ocean. And it's fucking weird. And I just feel
awesome.
I feel like that's a really good place to end things on. Like, mysterious purple orb at the bottom of the ocean.
What mystery, magical,
I'm
purple.
Wondering if it's maybe Prince reincarnated.
Yes.
Prince from the Prince Nebula. left his egg sack in the Marigold dress.
Jesus.
I don't know. I think he was out of this world. So
yeah, you know. I wouldn't be surprised. Anyways, it's magical and it's just cool, and I love shit like that. So we'll post it. Check it out.
Yeah, and go get yourself some more purple. If your house is lacking purple,
you need that.
Get some purple.
Purple is powerful.
Purple is power.
Yeah, get some purple candles. You know, also lavender.
I love
that. Everyone will speak. I carry lavender essential oil with me. Yeah, all the time.
I was spewing it earlier, not from my body, but from my aromatherapy diffuser.
It just makes life better. Yeah. My tip to you: go get some lavender essential oil. I promise.
Just huff it.
Just do it.
But dilute it first because
it's rough.
Yeah, it's not good. Bare on your skin, but get it.
I put it bare on my skin. Put like a drop on my I put a drop on my wrists and I rub it, and then I'll like inhale it when I'm stressed out.
I just mix it with a carrier.
That works too.
Yeah.
Okay, so purple, that's color purple. Look forward to more color focused episodes in the future. Like I said, we're gonna kind of do them sporadically, I think.
Yeah, just when we're feeling like.
When we're feeling color. And color is so fun. Like, I had so much fun looking into the history of purple.
There's so much history to colors. It's crazy.
And we only like scratched the surface. Like,
yeah.
Colors are crazy. So much, yeah. They're so nuts.
Crazy.
Who would like to do our listener mail?
I'll do it.
Okay, cool.
There you go. All right. So we got listener mail from Celia. Hey, Art History Babes. I just discovered your podcasts, and they are making my day at work so much better. I feel like I'm discussing art with my friends, and that's amazing. I just wanted to say that I love and appreciate what you do. I'm reviewing stuff, learning new things, and laughing. I only wish I could have some wine as well.
Mm.
Little wine emoji. It's so cute. I know a little encouragement is always nice to hear, so here it is. Keep doing your thing. Thank you. Oh, girl.
Thank you so much.
That is so awesome.
Okay.
God damn it. We just love it so much. We love all of the listener mail.
We love hearing nice things about us.
Yeah.
You know, you guys, if you send the listener mail, we'll read it. And we'll give you a shout out. And it's very fun for us and exciting. So.
And we hope you take some time, even if like, I mean, I love that you're like listening to us at work and stuff. But I love to imagine our listeners out there like having a glass of wine with us and just like hanging out.
Just put some wine in your... like clean canteen or whatever.
Yeah.
No one will know.
No one will know.
That's like my daily life.
I've done it. Many times.
There's no shame in my game, ladies.
Sometimes just throw a little Bailey's in your coffee.
Yeah.
You know
what? Thank you for all the lovely listener mail. Our lovely friend Craig followed up.
Oh, he did.
He sent us some lovely pictures from Calgary.
Our Canadian friend. Oh,
our Canadian friend.
So sweet.
Yeah, forever up in Canada. We'll hit you up.
Thanks, Craig.
He sent us some really pretty pictures.
They were beautiful.
I've been to the airport there, but that's it.
Wow. Yeah, that's more than me. I've never set foot.
We should go to Canada,
I set foot
you guys.
In the other side, Vancouver, all that. But I would love...
We'll
thank you
up.
All.
Oh, wait.
So
before we sign off, we need to make the shout out of our Patreon.
Yeah. So new things are happening. We started a Patreon account. So what that means is basically if you like us and if you have a couple extra dollars you want to throw our way, that'd be amazing. No pressure whatsoever.
You know what? There's no pressure. But us just put a little bit of pressure. We love what we do. And you know what? We want to get better at it. And part of being better at it is all of us being able to speak into a microphone at the same time.
Yeah.
And so that's on our list. We're trying to get our sound figured out better. I've had a couple of people make a couple little comments about like, hey, sometimes so-and-so sounds really far away. Yes, baby. They are far away. It doesn't just sound that way. Any sort of donations are hugely appreciated. We love you. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're awesome.
In addition to it, we definitely want to improve our tech situation. And it, like, we hope to get our blog going. We hope eventually get like YouTube videos going. We want to really be able to make more of this content because we love making it and we love that you guys love taking it in, but we are also grad students and it takes time and money.
We're so broke.
We're broke.
Especially right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Lord. You just gave me anxiety.
I'm sorry.
We're broke and we're busy. So literally any contribution you can make will make our day. So if you can, that'd be great. Patreon.com/arthistorybabes. There's also a link on our website, arthistorybabes.com. If you have questions or thoughts or want to contribute to the conversation, arthistorybabes@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr. We're on everything.
Facebook.
Like us on Facebook.
I'm OG. I enjoy Facebook. So all of your interactions on Facebook with us, I will typically be the one to be responding to you because I don't know how to work everything else. So.
But yeah, we're all over the place. So yeah, I mean, we love hearing from you. Any type of support is great. Thank you for listening. Our subscribers hit 1,500 this week, which
big
was
deal.
I screamed. Yeah. I saw that. I was in the bathroom. Yep.
Our subscribers hit 1,500 this week.
Woo!
So thank you so much.
Oh, I think I got
seriously, we really appreciate it. You guys are great.
We're so excited. I can't believe it.
This is so fun.
We only want to see you laughing in the purple rain. Honestly.
Like,
please come find us in the purple rain. I don't want to spend the apocalypse alone.
Yes. And on that note. We will catch you next time with our next episode, Frida Kahlo.
Oh, baby. I have no idea how excited I am.
It's
going down.
Am I doing the horn again?
Are we doing the horn?
Frida Kahlo.
Next episode. Yeah, come on, girl. It's going to be lit, fam. Trying to act like I know new age terminology.
You youngins. All right, thanks so much, guys. We'll catch you next time.
The Art History Babes.
And we see that in multiple cultures throughout history, starting with the great Cleopatra.
I love her so much. even though she's killing hella snails. But